All right, we're going to go ahead and get started. I'm impressed. It is a gorgeous day, and you've chosen to stay inside for an extra hour, but it's a topic that for all of us who have kids, it's an important one. We will put this online, so if you have to refer back to something, as long as I hit the right buttons, we're in good shape. Brian's out on the boat, so he trusted me with that. Yes, it will. Hopefully. Maybe. No, it will. No, it's my pleasure. Matt Jaderston is my oldest son, and he has been a youth pastor now for 6 years at Eastminster Presbyterian. He's come through our programs here. He's been in leadership, and he now leads our young adult ministry as well. And so it's with great pleasure as a dad and as a director. I'm excited for just watching him. He just finished his master's degree at Fuller Seminary, and he's put a lot of work into his career as a pastor, and so it's really fun to just see him grow and emerge. So without any further words, I'm going to hand it to Matt, and he's going to take it away.
Well, I'm happy to be here with you guys this early afternoon, and I'm a little tired, I have to be honest. Our young adults thought last night would be a great night to stay up till 1 a.m., so we had a lot of fun last night, but I'm happy to be here. The teaching I'm going to do this morning, it's actually a six-week seminar that I've condensed into one 45-minute session. So we're there's a lot of information. It might be kind of like drinking from a fire hose. So I tried to condense it as much as I could. And it's primarily focused from adolescents up. I know there's a lot of people concerned about screen time with younger kids. What we found in our research is that right now we don't know a whole lot of the effects on screens on young children yet. That information is so new to us. So we're getting a lot more of that research just every single day as that stuff comes in. I'm going to be referring primarily to three resources where I get a lot of my information. One of them was one of the professors that I studied under. His name is Andrew Zersky, and he wrote a book called Beyond the Screen, hence the name of this seminar. It's definitely a resource that I would recommend if you have teens. I'm gonna reference him a little bit as I go. Another resource I used was an author by the name of Andy Crouch. He wrote a book called The TechWise Family. The TechWise Family, again, a phenomenal research on a holistic view on how to approach technology in the home. And lastly, another great resource by my professor at Fuller, her name is Kara Powell. She's fantastic, and she wrote a book called Right Click. So just off the bat, I wanted to get those out there so you have follow-up resources if you wanted to do some of your own studying, and they're all great. I'd highly recommend all three of them. I'll also say this before I get started. I am an expert parent with my two-year-old. Been parenting for two whole years, so I'm learning this stuff as much as you are. My experience primarily comes from the work I've done in seminary and also just working with high school students and middle school students on a daily basis. I know what they're struggling with. I've had so many different conversations in regards to some pretty heavy stuff. We're going to address things like issues of pornography, issues of screen addiction and different things. But I've been in the trenches, so I've had these conversations, and we'll see what we can learn this morning. I'm going to begin by just giving you a quick overview of six things to consider, and then I'm going to dive into each one of these six things individually, and we'll try to cover as much as we can in the short time we have. First is this: your kids, depending on the age, which I'm guessing if they're in high school or below, are digital natives in the sense that they have no understanding of the reality of life without smartphones. And this is important. They have no understanding of life without the internet, life without social media, and it is likely that your kids are smarter, faster, and better at using and learning technology than you. I found this reality to be very true, and the question that I get all the time from parents is, how do I keep up? You know, my kids have all these apps. How do I know what's going on in their world? And my answer is always, you can't. They're going to be faster. They're going to be smarter. They tend to pick up on things quicker. And the other piece of that is that they don't know a world without it. I think for us, it's easy to say, I remember back when, right, we had flip phones. I can remember back when we had cell phones that couldn't send text messages. I remember back when we had phones that had cords, which for me is like, what, right? But our kids can't say, I remember back when. For a lot of them, smartphones are a given, right? They've always existed. So we need to understand that that's the frame of mind that we're working with. This is from the book Beyond the Screen by Dr. Andrew Zersky. He says this, the rise in dominance of social technology is a signpost that should help us see that teens are hungry for continuous, meaningful relationships with other humans and kinds of community not easily discovered in the digital landscape of modern existence. The thesis of Zersky's book is that social media in and of itself and screens in and of themselves are not the addiction for teens. Rather, they are the means by which teens and adolescents seek meaningful relationships. And the problem is that on the other side of that, rarely is that what they find. And so they are searching for something meaningful. And so when we approach this, it's really important that we don't approach it from a, that we're demonizing their use of technology or we're waging war against technology, because the reality is, for a lot of them, what they are seeking is something much bigger. We're gonna hit on that here in a second. Not only is pornography more accessible now, more than ever, but kids are accessing it on smaller and more discreet ways using cellular devices. The term that's been coined is pocket porn. When I was in middle school, kids were accessing it in laptops. Before that, it was magazines. Now it is in the size of your hand, right? It's in a cell phone. This is where kids are accessing it. And we're gonna really address this pretty hard later on in the lecture, because I think it's really important to understand how it's happening, why it's happening, and what it's doing to the adolescent brain. There's no perfect formula for teaching healthy habits in regards to tech use, but these conversations in the home are imperative for their future. I'm not giving you a formula for perfect success in this. That's not what I'm here to do. Rather, I want to encourage healthy conversations in the home. I think that's one of the best ways and places to start, and we're going to look at ways we can do that and hopefully give you some tools to do that. As with everything we do, modeling what we teach is far more important than our content. Dealing with her own addiction to technology may be the first step. But this is something I get so often. I have kids who are frustrated because they feel like their parents are addicted to their phones. And I get it both ways, right? Parents are frustrated because they can't get their kids off their phones, but I hear it from our kids too. So I think it's important for us to keep this in mind as we look at these different things. And lastly, guardrails are an important part of providing a safe environment for our kids. But the goal should be to prepare them to one day leave the home when the guardrails will no longer be in place. Guardrails are helpful tools, but they are not a substitute for the principles that permeate the heart. What I mean by guardrails are things that I'm going to give you some very specific things that you can do that might help create some safety in your home in regards to tech use. A couple things on that. They're not foolproof. Your kids are probably smart enough to get around them. And the reality is they are not a substitute for the things of the heart. And I can't emphasize that part of this enough, is that the things of the heart are really what we're after here, because at some point, our goal should be able to send them off into the world, not just create a bunch of rules for them that aren't going to exist in the next stage of their life. So I want to begin by looking at this first thing to consider. And that's this idea of being a digital native. And I don't love that terminology. It's a terminology coined by a guy named Mark Thompson, who wrote a book in regards to understanding adolescence and technology. But it's important for us to understand this idea for a few reasons. As I mentioned briefly, having this antagonistic view towards technology, really all it does is it turns kids away from what we're trying to teach. And I learned this early on in my teaching with kids. I remember I initially took a stance that I was going to be the youth pastor who did not get sucked into the vortex of social media. That was going to be my way of modeling a good Christian lifestyle. And I almost came off antagonistic in the way I taught against it. And what I found was, over time, is it almost turned people off immediately. It turned kids off immediately to what I was trying to get accomplished. And so rather than being anti-technology, what I would suggest is that we would be pro-meaningful relationships rather than anti-technology. And I think that's important because I think we could all agree that technology is a good thing. It has many meaningful uses. Even social media can have a lot of meaning. It can allow us to connect with others that we before could never connect with. So rather than being anti-technology, we want to be pro-meaningful relationships. And after all, as we've learned through what Professor Zersky has written, a lot of adolescents and teens are using technology to connect in meaningful ways. The rise and dominance of social media is a signpost to help us see that teens are hungry for continuous, meaningful relationships with other humans in a kind of community that are not easily discovered in the digital landscape of modern existence. Now, this is what I'm seeing, and I'm working with the young adult program this week, and here's what I've already witnessed, right? The first day, we're all sitting in a circle, and probably 10 out of 14 people have their cell phones out. And it's almost as if a cell phone has become a form of coping with the awkwardness of the first day of camp, right? You don't really know each other. You may have recognized them from previous years. And in order to sort of numb that awkward feeling, what do? We pull out our cell phones. And so it's been interesting to see as the week has gone on how cell phone use has actually gone down. As we've begun to connect with one another, as we've kind of broken that ice, we've seen almost a breakthrough in that space. And if you find yourself, you find your kids having difficulty connecting with groups of people, we often say in the good old days when we didn't have cell phones to distract us, you may be experiencing the effects of networked individualism. This is an epidemic that's dealing with this idea that while we are so connected to so many different people, so many people, especially young people, are feeling isolated, lonely, disconnected. And for many of them, it's this idea of being able to turn to a device as a form of numbing or a form of distraction from facing those awkward social spaces. So our social networks, in a lot of ways, have created an antisocial behavior. Here's what I would challenge all of you to do, and this is not easy, and it's something that I had to learn how to do. My challenge is to enter into the world of your kids' technology. Since kids are probably 10 steps ahead of you, ask them to bring you into their iPhone apps, games, or ways they connect. And I did this as a youth pastor. It took me some time, but when I kind of made the shift and I decided to enter into their world, I learned so much about what these things were doing and how they are connecting with one another. Beneath this, I have this idea of play sharing. And this is, I wish I could spend more time on this because I think it's a really powerful idea. But play sharing is this idea that happens in the mundane and the undramatic. Teens are not just looking for someone to share the big moments, religious moments in times of crisis or suffering, but even in the most mundane moments of life. An example of this, there was an app that came out on the iPhone called Yo. Now, Yo was a very silly idea. Basically, all it was is I could take out my cell phone, look at my list of friends, click on one of their names, and it would send a yo to that friend. And all that meant was that their phone would go, yo. And it would say, from Matt Jaderston. But here's what's interesting. So I connected with, I think my whole youth group had yo. So I've got like 100 kids on my cell phone constantly yoing me. It's driving my wife crazy, right? Just yo, yo, yo. But I asked one of our kids, I said, what's the point of yo? Why do you have yo? And his response was so interesting. He says, yeah, it's just, you know, it's just kind of weird. We just kind of do it. Didn't really have an answer. But he says, sometimes at night when I kind of feel lonely, I'll yo someone, and then it helps me know that someone else exists. Right? That was basically the gist of their answer. And it dawned on me that here we have this silly app that was created, and yet there is an attempt for a meaningful connection with someone in moments of loneliness. I think it's important for us to understand that often these mundane and silly moments can have a meaningful impact. And this idea of play sharing is that we are entering into the lives of our kids, entering into their world, not asking them to step up to where we're at, but entering into their world to be able to connect with them in fun ways. I see this happening in my wife's family really well and also in my family. They have something called a group text. So my wife, her siblings, and their parents, they're all in this group text together, and they love to just text each other throughout the day. They'll send pictures, they'll send emojis, which are just little pictures. I don't really know how to describe an emoji. Little smiley faces and whatnot. They'll send whatever it might be, but there is a way that they're connecting with one another in a way that is so different than ways we connected in the past. With our kids, I've connected with them in a variety of different ways with my students through technology. And I found that when I participate, even in the most mundane things, like sending gifts after gifts, if you don't know what a GIF is, it's like a slow-moving picture, right? We'll send maybe a row of GIFs that last for like an hour. They'll just go back and forth. But in the most mundane, silly ways, I am forging a connection with them, speaking their language, connecting to their lives in ways that gives me a new right to speak into their life when real things happen, when they have big moments, when they have times of crisis, when they're in the midst of suffering. There is a new type of connection that is forged. I'd like to spend more time on that last one, but for the sake of time, I'm going to move on because this next one's a big one. In dealing with pornography, this idea is so important. And I can't emphasize how important your role is as a parent is in the midst of this. And I'm going to share a little bit of my experience. Growing up, I went to a public school. And if your kids are in public school, even if your kids are in private school, because I know how that world is too, the likelihood is conversations that happen in the locker room, in the lunchroom, wherever they might be, they are going to have some sort of encounter with ideas of sexuality, pornography, and they will learn about it in ways that are not in the home. And it'll happen at a young age. We'll look at some statistics in a moment, but they say the average young adolescent boy, his first encounter with pornography is now 8 to 12 years old. So that's kind of when that typically encounters it, which creates immense confusion in their life. So we're gonna look at this idea. I took an anonymous poll. This is with my high school students. I'll read these out since you can't really see them. One of our nights we had a youth group. I took an anonymous poll just to see where kids were at in their use of pornography. Now this is a very small sample size, but I think it can hint to the greater issue that we're dealing with. On the left here, the yellow is representing of, this is male, this is female. The yellow is represented to never watch porn. The orange is occasionally watch porn. And the red is addicted to pornography. And my definition of addicted was you watch it daily. You'll notice there's a trend. Anonymously, 65 students out of 102 admitted to being addicted to pornography. These are church-going, great, affluent families and their kids struggling with this reality. Now, this was even more shocking to me. Here is when I interviewed the girls, right? We asked the girls, what's yours? A majority of them never watched. About 30 of them said occasionally. And there were a good number, over 10 girls admitted to being addicted to pornography. Now, again, this is a small sample size, but I hope it at least allows you to see that this is a reality that it's more than likely your kids are dealing with. Whether or not they're engaged in it or not, they're likely going to be encountering it with their friends or others who are struggling. Couple suggestions to bring into the fold when you're dealing with this, or if you find out that your kid is dealing with pornography, a couple just tips that I found to be really helpful. Number one, don't freak out. They're already likely feeling immense shame. And so we need to be understanding that this is kind of a reality that in the world we live in. Second is the conversation, however awkward, is the most loving thing you can do. This establishes a line of trust and an invitation to confess. A little bit of my story. When I was in the seventh grade, I encountered pornography on our home computer. And I happened to be home from school one day. I was sick for whatever reason. And I happened to encounter it, and one thing led to another. And I didn't know exactly what it was, but I know that it made me feel good. And after a couple of hours, I heard my dad come home early. I started to freak out. My computer happened to freeze at that moment, so now I'm really freaking out. So I ended up pushing the button to turned out off the computer, power it down, and I pretended to fall asleep on the couch, and I could hear my dad's footsteps coming in the door. And it was definitely one of the most terrifying moments of my life. My dad came down, and he just had this dad sense, right? He knew something was wrong, like a good father would. My dad came in, turned on the computer, and I knew in that moment I was caught. Now, I would say that being caught was probably the best thing that could ever happen to a seventh grade me. And I would say for you, catching your kids in the midst of whatever's going on is a good thing because it allows a beginning of a conversation and opening up that line of trust. My dad sat me down, and full of grace and truth, he gave me consequences. He talked about the issues with pornography. He talked about just how this home is not going to be a place where this happens. He made me confess to my mom, which was even more awkward. But it was a really helpful thing because it opened a line of trust and a line of conversation between my parents. There were some very specific rules. I wasn't allowed to use the internet for 30 days. I had a couple things I had to do. I had to talk to my youth pastor. But more than anything, more than any of the perfect parenting things to do in those moments, is it opened up this line of communication. Because here's the truth. That wasn't the first time that I messed up. It happened again in high school. Probably happened a couple more times. But every time I was met with both truth and grace, and I was able to have a conversation. And there was even one time in high school where I was able to confess without being prompted. And that's the kind of relationship that we want to create in our homes. One that is full of truth, grace, and mercy. And I hope, whether or not this is something that you've been dealing with, that those conversations are beginning to happen. And I would recommend bringing in both the mom and the dad because I think that's so important to have both in that reality. Number three, remember to emphasize that sex is a good thing. It is a gift from God to be enjoyed in the safety and intimacy of marriage. So often when we rail so hard against things like pornography, we almost create this idea that sex is bad. But we know that sex is a gift from God to be enjoyed in the intimacy of marriage. So our teaching is not just don't do this, but here's what you have to look forward to. I would say this, and this is a big one. It's best to have this conversation before they hear about it elsewhere. Exposure to pornography at a young age can create confusion and shame, especially when they do not fully understand that it's happening. Most kids' exposure is 8 to 12 years old. I had a kid who was at a friend's house, and the friend happened to be like, hey, come watch this, come check this out, and showed him some very, very explicit stuff. It really emotionally hurt this kid to see this stuff. And the thing he said to me was, it's like, it was weird because part of me liked it, but the other part of me hated myself for it. And it was a secret that he held for 5 years before finally confessing at summer camp. And this is what happens, right? There's something about the biology of how we are created that when we see something like that, initially there's something that arouses us and gets us excited. It gets us feeling things that we're not used to feeling. But there is deep shame because I think deep within our being, we know that something is not right. We know that this is a distortion of what God designed. So I would encourage, have that conversation. It's going to be awkward. There's no perfect way to do it. My dad took all three of us one at a time. We went on a special camping trip with dad to learn about the birds and the bees. All right, there's many ways to do it, and it's awkward, it's weird. There's no right way to do it, but I cannot encourage that more because I do believe that that will happen. Those conversations will happen outside the home, and you want to be the first person to have that conversation. Lastly, set guardrails and be proactive. There are ways, I'm going to give you some very specific ways to be proactive in the home to try to avoid that as much as possible. Now, it's not a science. There's no perfect way, but I can at least give you some tools to do that. A couple things to keep in mind. A majority of young people are not seeking out pornography through magazines and laptops, but on cell phones, iPads, and iPhones. This is where a majority of this is happening. And so be aware of that. If you allow your kids to take their iPhone to bed at night, that's probably the number one danger zone where this happens because it's in the intimacy and privacy of a bedroom. There's no accountability. And we all know kids, adolescents, do not make great decisions after dark. And so I would highly recommend that not being the, or something to consider in your home. Here is a list of commonly used apps. Now, this is often very eye-opening for parents. Here is a list of commonly used apps where porn is accessible. And again, don't freak out, but here are some apps. Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, Facebook, Reddit, Periscope, which if you know what Periscope is, I'll explain what all these are because you may not know what some of these are, and YouTube. Instagram is a photo sharing app. How many of you have Instagram? Okay, a lot of you. How many do your kids have Instagram? Are you aware of it? Instagram is where many of our high school kids struggle. Because if you don't know anything about their algorithm, is that when you go to the, there's a certain tab you can go to where you can find new friends on Instagram or see new photos. And now they do video as well. If you look at a photo that happens to be, let's just say, a girl in a swimsuit, all of a sudden, Instagram knows your preference. And so they're going to send you 5 more photos just like it. If you happen to look at something explicit, it's going to learn your behavior, and it's going to feed into the addiction that the brain, the dopamine that your brain is receiving, and all of a sudden, your Instagram becomes a source to access very explicit material. I had a parent one time when I was giving a similar seminar last year say, I have Instagram, I don't think that's true. And I simply said, you don't believe me, go into the search algorithm and I want you just to search an eggplant. There's a little eggplant emoji, which happens to be a phallic image, and immediately her face just, she couldn't believe it. The stuff that came up is absolutely horrendous. And this is on a very popular social media that many of your kids probably use. Now, what I'm not saying is delete all the apps, do not use them. All I want to do right now in this moment is open your eyes to the reality of the apps that we use and we allow our kids to use. And whether or not you want to allow your kids to use these apps is at your discretion. Snapchat, an app that was designed essentially to send pictures of a nude body to somebody else. Because what happens is when you send these photos, they disappear within moments. About a year and a half ago, Snapchat had a massive leak of minors sending nude photos to other people that was essentially sent out to the entire world to see. Snapchat is an app that many of our students use. I would say 90% of our students use it. It can be used in really good ways and is not evil in and of itself. But I want to make you aware of some of the dangers of these apps. Twitter, meant to be used to share 140 characters, right? Quick news, quick little snippets. Same thing as Instagram. The algorithm they use can be very, very harmful in the same way. Periscope, and again, Periscope is a live sharing app. So your kids can go live on their phone, and they can share exactly what's happening in the moment, and people can comment as to what's happening. And this one is one I would warn parents against because I think it's one that can be used by anybody. You don't know who's watching. You don't know who they could be watching. Recently, there was a group that recorded a burglary live. It had over 1,000 viewers watching it happen. And there was incredible violence that happened. Just want to make you aware of that one as well. Again, if you have questions on any of these, you can ask me at the end. I'm going to move on just for the sake of time. I just wanted to give you a brief overview of applications that are made available, and your kids are probably using them. Browser history is easy to cover up, and filters can be bypassed. That does not mean don't get a filter. Filters are really helpful. But I just want to be clear that those are things that can be bypassed through circumventers and other various things that your kids probably know about. Here's some recommendations, and these are, again, these are the guardrails. These are the things that we put into place to help create a safe home environment. They're not perfect. Again, it's not a replacement for what happens in the heart, but I think that these can be really helpful. Consider a home browser filter. I gave you 3 recommendations that are all very good. Covenant Eyes, it's a separate browser that works both for iPhones, iPads, and home devices. They can all connect. X3 Watch, which is a phenomenal organization that essentially deals with pornography addiction. And if you have that in your home, it's a great place to get help. And Family Shield, I think that's by Norton. They also do a really good job. Even better than a filter, consider a router. A clean router essentially stops any form of explicit material before it even gets to your whatever internet browser you use. So instead of putting a filter or a separate internet browser, you can nip it in the bud from the very beginning. Here are some good ones. Clean router is great. Symantec Norton Family Premier, a little more expensive, but does a great job as well. And NetNanny is another one that I haven't used personally, but I did a little research and it's supposed to also be quite good. Now, routers, they can be a little bit expensive, but they also may not be as fast as your current router. But again, this is one of those moments where you really take into effect what is most important in our home. And I would highly ask you to consider using one of those routers. Consider establishing a phone bucket. I've heard parents call it different things, or something where all of our devices go to sleep after 9 p.m. Again, where we see the most temptation with our kids is after we go to bed and we take our devices with us. But if we have a place as a family where all the phones go at night, maybe we have a little charging bin where they all get charged, that is a great way to establish that boundary early on. Know your kids' passwords and be proactive. A lot of these things are a lot easier when that culture is set early on. If your kid's already in high school, this may be more difficult, and I'm fully aware of that. But if you haven't gotten there yet, I would encourage you to make this a given. I think it's so important that we are families that share passwords, right? It provides accountability. It provides a safe haven where we know what's going on in our kids' lives. It doesn't mean that we're going to be snooping in our kids' phones every night necessarily, but it may mean that there is that accountability there. And I know that if my parents had my password, I'd be much less likely to use a phone for other activity. Here's the main thing, and I want to close with this on this subject, and then we'll move on. No matter how many filters, protections, guardrails you establish, keep in mind one day your child will leave the home. We're after God's heart and cultivating a desire for healthy relationships. That's the main thing, and that's what we want to teach in our homes. We want to discuss the why. Why are we trying to stay away from pornography? Why is this a bad thing? We know that sex is a good gift from God to be enjoyed in the intimacy of marriage, and that pornography is a distortion of that. When I teach this with my high school kids, and we talk about this, and we talk about it probably every year because it's such a big part of their world, here are some of the things that I hit on. Number one, porn rewires the brain. And the younger you are, the more this takes an effect early on. There was a book by a Wheaton graduate. I'm blanking on his name right now. It's a phenomenal book. It's called Wired for Intimacy. And his whole thesis is the science behind pornography's effects on the brain, how it actually rewires us to think about sex. He noted that there's an increased number of men in their 20s who are already struggling with erectile dysfunction, and it's directly linked to the use of pornography. There is something that is happening both physically and mentally that is changing the way we think about sexuality. We know that porn kills intimacy. Here's what's so interesting to me. The secular world is starting to become aware of these realities. There is a whole secular website. It's called Fight the New Drug. It's not a Christian website. It's totally secular, but it is devoted to outing the realities of pornography. It's devoted to teaching the world about the effects that it's having on the brain and the effects that it's having on society. That's when you know that something has gotten bad, is when the secular world even recognizes the problem. Again, porn and masturbation has lasting effects on the physical body. And I'll say this to parents. It's not enough just to talk about pornography. You've got to deal with what's happening. A majority of your kids, if they're viewing pornography, it usually means they're wrestling with this idea of masturbation. And many of them don't know what that is. They don't fully understand it. And it's really healthy to have these conversations because they're hearing it from their friends. And they'd much rather probably hear it in the safety of their own home, talking to their parents. As awkward as it might be, we encourage those conversations. Last, we talked about how pornography perpetuates the sex slavery industry. If we know anything about the millennial generation, is that they are people who have a heart for social justice. And when you bring this into the conversation, you see the link between pornography and the sex slavery industry. There's something of a charge, an excitement that people can rally behind to say, I am against this because I know what it does to women. I know how women are oppressed and enslaved in this industry. And that's something that we always bring into our conversations as well. All right, moving on. How am I doing on time? Not too bad. Okay. There is no perfect formula for teaching healthy habits in regards to tech use. But again, the conversations in the home are imperative for their future. I want to change gears a little bit. The book, The Tech Wise Family by Andy Crouch, is such a great resource. And I would, of all the books I recommended, this is the one that I would encourage you to read. And it's short, it's sweet, it's laid out with a lot of great information and a lot of great research. But I'm going to read a quote from Andy Crouch. Our homes are not meant to be just refueling stations, places where we and our devices rest briefly, top up our charge, and then go back to frantic activity. They are meant to be places where the best of life happens. This is our hope for our homes, that they would not just be a place to recharge and then go. And I know if you are anything like the people in my congregation, you live crazy, busy lives. Your kids live crazy, busy lives, moving from one thing to the next sporting event. And life at times can feel chaotic and crazy. But I think our homes are meant to be more than that. I think we want to create a culture where our homes are more than just refueling stations to get to the next thing, but rather it's where the best of life happens. And we know that technology, though it can be helpful, it has a dark side. It can be a hindrance in keeping the Sabbath. It can be a hindrance for us truly resting. I know this is true of me. I go to take a nap. I pull up my phone. I check my Twitter. And all of a sudden, I'm on Twitter for 30 minutes, and I can't sleep. There's even science now that says the blue light that comes from cell phones inhibits our brain from being able to sleep well. So there's both science behind this and also a reality of the distraction of technology and having true rest. Now, I want to look at 10 commitments that Andy Crouch uses with his family. And I want to be very clear. This is not the 10 commandments, okay? I'm not saying first thing you do is go home and try to institute all these 10 commitments. That would be really difficult, especially if you already have habits in the home. And Crouch even admits in his book that this is messy. They aren't perfect. They don't always hold to these, and they don't treat them like the 10 commandments, but they are part of how they create a culture in their home. Maybe two or three of these are going to resonate with you, and they may be ones you want to make as commitments to have in your home. And my encouragement is that after going through this list, when we finish the seminar, if there's time, you and your spouse could get together and talk through what are the commitments that you want to have in your home. Maybe it's 5 commitments. What are the 5 things you want to commit to see your home, not just as a refueling station, but as a place where meaningful relationship happens? Here's what the Crouch family decided. Number one. We develop wisdom and courage together as a family. And I'm not going to expound on these too much. If you do end up buying the book, he devotes each chapter to each one of these commitments. You'll get a lot more information on these. We develop wisdom and courage together as a family. Number two, we want to create more than we consume. So we fill the center of our home with things that reward skill and active engagement. I love that. We want to create more than we consume. He's pressing against our consumeristic tendencies. Number three, we are designed for a rhythm of work and rest. So 1 hour a day, which for them is their mealtime as a family, 1 day a week, which is their Sabbath, and 1 week a year, we turn off our devices and worship, feast, play, and rest together. Important to note there, I love that he instituted the word play, because turning off our devices and being together is not just, I think when you tell a kid, we're going to just worship and rest together, they're going to be like, huh? Right? Play is spiritual. Play is so important, such an important element to being in the home together and to creating a culture where they're not, it's not just a place to refuel, but it's a place where the best of life happens. Number four, we wake up before our devices do and they go to bed before we do. That's one of my favorites. We wake up before our devices do and they go to bed before we do. Number five, we aim for, again, it's messy, but we aim for no screens before double digits at school and at home. So in the mornings, we wake up together with the family, no screens before 10 o'clock. I think that's really healthy. Number six, we use screens for a purpose and we use them together, rather than aimlessly and alone. Here, Crouch is getting after the networked individualism that many of us experience because of the culture we live in. And instead of using screens just aimlessly and without purpose, we use them together. We have ways we use them together rather than aimlessly and alone. A buddy of mine is a big-time gamer. He loves to play video games. And in his home, he has a rule that video games are meant to be played together. And that was something that he instituted because he saw how immediately his kids were becoming addicted to playing the PlayStation, right, at such a young age. And he said, all right, we can't do this. I'm not ready to give up gaming, but we can do it together. So gaming, if your kids are into video games, perhaps a rule would be we game together. We play together. Number seven, car time is conversation time. Instead of tuning into your cell phone on a long drive, perhaps we use that as together time. On our way to school, we're going to talk. Tell me about your day. Tell me about what you learned. Tell me whatever. Use that as conversation time. Eight, spouses have one another's passwords, and parents have total access to children's devices. We had this conversation with our young adults this morning. There was an article written and relevant that said, password sharing is the new linchpin to intimacy. How interesting is that? That sharing passwords is the new type of intimacy. Spouses have each other's passwords, and in our case, my wife has my fingerprint, which works great. And parents have total access to children's devices. And again, if your kids are young, it is so much easier to create that culture when they're young than trying to change culture when they're already to a place where there's already habits and there's already those realities. Number nine, we learn to sing together rather than letting recorded and amplified music take over our lives and worship. And number 10, we show up in person for the big events of life. We learn how to be human by being fully present at our moments of greatest vulnerability. We hope to die in one another's arms. A week and a half ago, I was directing a high school camp for high school students, and it was really exciting. We had our biggest camp we've ever had. We had so much stuff that I had to program, so much stuff in my mind, and we happened to find out the week before that my grandpa was very close to passing. And I remember calling my dad up and saying, Dad, here's the thing. I've got to be at this okay, I can't miss this camp. This is my job. This is the pinnacle of what I do every year. Is this something that I need to get? Do I need to get out of my camp to go to this funeral? And my dad was just simply said, Matt, this is one of those things that is important to be there. And your camp will survive without you. And I think that there's a reality to this idea that we show up for the big moments in life, the important moments of life. Work can wait. Other things can wait. And we learn how to be human and fully present at our moments of greatest vulnerability. And I'll tell you what, that funeral, as sad and as difficult as it was, is going to leave an lasting impression on my life. And I'm so glad I was there. And I think for all of us, learning to be fully present in the big moments is so important. A warning, and just looking at these Ten Commandments, Ten Commitments. They're not the Ten Commandments. I just want to remind you that this isn't a science. It's not perfect. And likely, those are not going to be your Ten Commitments. And it is so much easier for a young family to start with a clean slate. I've got it made, right? My kid is 2. We've probably already made 1,000 mistakes. But at least now we can think about these things as technology continues to change. It's much more difficult to change culture than it is to create new culture. Seek to create culture by example before attempting to change, manipulate your family's current habits. This is so important. It's so difficult to change habits, to change the way we behave if we don't lead by example. If we say, do this, live this way, put your phones away, and yet we are glued to our phones, our kids are just going to grow in resentment, and they're not ultimately going to believe in our integrity in that. And lastly, this is not a science, but it must be met with enormous amounts of grace and prayer. And again, as with anything we do, what we teach is far more important. Modeling what we teach is far more important than our content. Dealing with our own addiction to technology may be the first step. Dealing with addiction, and this is in specific to being addicted to technology, being addicted to our cell phones, addicted to screens. Here are a couple things that our family has instituted. One is The Forest. The Forest is an app, believe it or not, that helps deal with technology addiction. It's an app that helps deal with being addicted to apps. As ironic as that is. Now, The Forest, I'm gonna pull it up here. You can find this in the App Store. It's $1.99, but I promise you it's $1.99 well spent. Is an app that allows you to grow trees. And what it is if you grow a tree, so you see there's 25 minutes on this clock. If I say plant, it tells me to go back to my work. So I turn my phone off. I cannot look at my phone for 25 minutes. And what's cool is that if you grow enough trees, the company will plant a real tree in real life. Now, it's just kind of a fun way to exercise being present. So a great example or way to use this might be, okay, it's dinner time. Everybody grow a tree. Put your phone away. Let's be present together in this moment. My wife and I have competitions. Who can grow the most trees? She destroys me every time. But that's another great way to have a fun way to deal with these things together. The Fox is what I call the phone box. We have a little clear box that occasionally we will throw our phones into. I'll come home from work and Betsy's been with Pierce all day. She's tired. And the first thing I do is I pull up my phone and she'll say, Matt, it's time to put the phone in the box, right? So I put the phone away and I am present while the phone is in the box. A detox. You may need to have a detox. Sometimes one of the best things that I have to do in my own life is to delete the apps that I am most addicted to. And I'll delete them for 30 days, start fresh. Practice being fully present wherever you are at. And it may be finding accountability. This is one of the things that we say with accountability, is that you give somebody in your life permission to call you out on your commitment. And the rule is this: you can call them out and they cannot be angry and they cannot be defensive. You state that from the onset. Lastly, get radical. Flip phones may be a hassle, they may be inconvenient, but they may make you more human. That's not an easy change. I tried to do it one time. I got a flip phone, said I can do this. I lasted 2 weeks. So you're speaking from someone who had a bad experience with that. I didn't make it very far. But I'll tell you what, those 2 weeks, I was a little bit more human. That may be a reality. You may need to go in that direction. Maybe, you know, one of the things, there's a family in our church who doesn't allow their kids to have smartphones until they graduate. And some people say, whoa, that's radical. But I'm like, those kids are so present. They're not distracted by their phones. They are absolutely in the moment. And I'm definitely considering that down the road if they still make flip phones. Last, and this is our last thing, and then we'll wrap this up. I'm pushing time here. Guardrails are an important part of providing a safe environment for our kids, but the goal should be to prepare them to one day leave the home when the guardrails will no longer be in place. Guardrails are helpful tools, but they are not, there's a typo there, I'm sorry, they are not a substitute for the principles that permeate the heart. Three questions to consider when setting guardrails. Number one, do these rules help teach our kids discernment, or do these rules do all the thinking for them? Something to consider, when we make rules in the home, are we doing that in a way that's allowing them to learn why we're doing them, or are we simply doing them with doing all the thinking for them? Number two, do these rules provide opportunities for us to dialogue with them? Are they hard and fast rules, or are they ways that open up streams of conversation? Number three, is this rule really motivated by a desire for my kids' development, or is it more for my convenience? Also, a great question to consider when we set up guardrails in the home. Here are some examples. Again, these are not the rule, but they are something to think about as some examples of what a guardrail might look like. Number one, mom and dad have the right to check Facebook messages, text messages, and have all passwords. Again, having the right does not mean that they're going to do it every single day. Number two, all phones go in a designated location after 9 p.m. every night to be charged. Number three, maybe we apply a separate internet browser that reports of any sexual or explicit activity of any kind. Number four, any new app download must be approved by parents. This is a big one, and it's really easy to set up. Essentially, you can set up your smartphone to have a password-protected barrier between them and downloading new apps. So they must ask mom or dad, is it okay if I download Bubble Jump or whatever game they want to download? And that way, you know what's going on in their phone. You know kind of what is allowed to be in, and you get to make the decisions as to when it's appropriate for them to have things like Facebook, like Instagram, like Snapchat, when they're at the maturity to be able to handle those things. No cell phones at the dinner table. Cell phones are a privilege and can be taken away if rules are broken. Very important to set that culture early. They are a privilege, not a right. And again, consider not buying your kids a smartphone until they're older. You have the power to set that culture. You create that culture in the home. Practice being present together. Here's just some fun ways. We did a thing at our church where we would send out family challenges. And once a week, we would send out a new challenge for families to do in the home. And these are just some fun little things you can do to practice being fully present with each other. One, we had them attempt a dinner table with all the phones put in a bucket, and the first person, they would go out to eat, and it was kind of a fun thing, but they said the first person who touched their phone had to pay for the meal. Now, obviously, your young kids probably can't pay for the meal, but it was kind of a fun little game they played. Another one, start a family texting thread where everyone can communicate with each other, where we're all in one place, we can all connect with one another. A couple apps for that, there's a GroupMe app that I use a lot with our students, and that's a way to connect with each other all in one text thread. Another app is Band, B-A-N-D. Great way for photo sharing, calendaring, and sharing information with one group that is great for families as well. Number three, get a post-it notepad at the beginning of the week. Have everyone write down 3 to 4 prayer requests, stick them on the refrigerator. At any point during the week, grab a request, pray for it, and throw it away. Again, fun way to create that culture in the home, a culture of being present. Pick a night to go through old Facebook or Instagram photos as a family, then dig into the closet and find the old family photos or videos to look at together. Another fun, great activity to do. Choose a day to do something fun as a family. However, it must be a screenless activity. Pick a night and find a box for everyone to put their cell phones in. Here, this is similar to the first one. Last person to check gets a prize. All right, a lot of information. I covered so many different things. We've already got questions, which is great. I'm going to open it up for just a moment. Any questions you might have, I'd be happy to answer. It's 11:54, so we'll take a few questions, and then you can talk to me after if you have more questions. Yeah.
Well, I need a fourth traveling alarm and make it vocal.
That's what I'm talking about right there.
Would you put, when this goes into the web,
yes, I will make a slide specifically that has all of my references and all the books that I referred to. Because, again, TechWise Family is a great resource, and Right Click by Kara Powell, another great resource. I'll put all those on there so you can have that.
Third thing, is this a reasonable question? Mm-hmm. Can you tell me how this is satisfying for you to ask that to our young ones? Can you tell me how this is satisfying?
I think it's a very good question.
Thank you.
Absolutely. You know, and that's, and I think if they're honest, they would say it's not. And I think that's one of the things that I've found out in my conversations with kids, whether you're dealing with just cell phone addiction in general or social media in general, or whether you're dealing with issues of pornography or other things, I think that when you ask those questions that really permeate the soul, I think that when the truth comes out, they say, yeah, you know, it's really, it's not, the satisfaction is not lasting. It's momentary. And I think when you can get to that, you can get to the reality of why meaningful relationships are so much better. Good question. Yeah. Oh, the TechWise Family. In the back here.
I'm wondering, have y'all had a time to share with the teenage kids this week about some of these rituals?
I have not. I've in the past, when I directed the middle school, we always did something like that, and I bet you that Cameron and his team have done something like that with them. I'll definitely talk to Taylor and just see what he's done, and I'd definitely encourage him to do something like that as well. Usually these are issues that high schoolers are just dealing with, and so my guess is that he, in his teaching, has addressed some of them, but I'll be sure to follow up with him as well. Yeah.
Our seventh graders, when they enter seventh grade, are assigned an iPad.
Yeah.
They take home on school lab, which you're
Yeah.
So how do you regulate that? So when I say it's time to go to bed, mm.
Right. It's a great question. So her question was if they have a school assigned iPad to do homework, right, which was what they're supposed to be using it for, how do you monitor that? What if they're in their room doing homework? Again, this is a messy thing. That wasn't something that you guys gave him, it was something that the school gave him. I think you can institute some rules. You know, even though he's using a school device at home, there can be some specific rules. If you're up past 9 o'clock doing homework, maybe you leave the door open. You're not allowed to, this is a silly rule, but it's a rule we have at our work just to help with productivity. We cannot have our computers facing outward. They must be facing towards the door. So there's accountability as to what we're working on. So when mom walks by the room, she's able to see what's going on. And that might be just a helpful rule to have in the home, because, that again, iPads are one of the ways that can really bring us away and distract us. But I also know the reality. That's how a lot of schools are moving to in terms of getting work done. So great question. And routers are huge. So if it's an issue with wanting to protect them from explicit content, routers will solve that problem for the most part. I mean, there are always ways to kind of find a way. I have 2 minutes. Okay, I'll take two more questions. Yeah. Awesome.
Or you can add in permissions for your kids on that shelf.
Awesome. One more question. Yeah.
Do you recommend the devices being in their bedrooms at all?
That's up to individual discretion. I would say no. I just think that it's too much of a temptation. And it really, what it does is it says that devices, screens, are meant to be used in isolation. And by having that, having a TV, having video games, having anything in the room, it's basically creating a culture where that happens alone. And we want to encourage that technology be used together in community. I think that's when it's best serviced, and that's how the best way to do that. So anyway, thank you so much for being here. If you have any more questions, thanks. I'll be here. You can feel free to come talk to me. I'd be happy to answer any other questions. Thanks.